few years ago, I took a job in public radio in Alaska. And, you know, working in public radio is a dream. You know, I loved it. And but working at, in public radio in a small fishing town in Alaska, you know, where the roads just end and it's hundreds of miles to the next town, is a different beast than any reporting I've ever done. Like, for one thing, you just deal with a lot of stuff that other journalists don't have to. Like, I remember one time we went off the air suddenly, and to get back on the air, I had to take the rest of the day and hike to the top of a mountain with a gas canister to refill the generator that powered our transmitter to get us back on the air. And another time I was interviewing a relatively high-profile Alaska congressional candidate who was traveling through town, and we were doing a live on-air interview. And, you know, the station was in, it was in a converted dentist's office in next to a quarry outside of town. Like, a colony of cats lived under the building, you know, it was a kind of, and in the middle of this interview, live on air, two cats started having sex under the floorboards beneath our feet. And I listened back to the recording afterwards, and the sound of the cats having sex, which is a crazy sound, by the way, if you've never heard it, it didn't come through on the microphone. So it just sort of sounded like in the middle of this interview, we both sort of drifted off, and there was like 20 seconds of dead air. And then we both get up and we start walking around the studio, and then I sort of whispered off mic, "I think they're fighting." And this political candidate leaned in, like basically leaned into the microphone and was like, "No, those are cats having sex." And, you know, by the way, not an FCC violation. But, you know, so in that job, I didn't really think I was going to be doing any stories that are really mattered to anyone besides my community and the state of Alaska. And then I got a letter one day. It was addressed to me, and when I opened it, it was something that looked like a ransom note. It was a photocopy of a prison ID card with a guy with like a big bushy beard smiling, and in big block letters in Sharpie, it said, "Eric Hafner, Democrat, running for U.S. House in Alaska from federal prison," and then a phone number. And so, like, I kind of like showed it to my coworkers in the newsroom, like, you know, like, get a load of this. And then I looked him up on Ballotpedia, and he was on the ballot. So I called him. I called the number. And this woman picks up, and she tells me that she's Eric Hafner's mom and his de facto communications director for his campaign, and that she'll pass a letter along to the prison in Otisville, New York, where he was incarcerated, and tell him to call me. And so the next day, I get a phone call, you know, like, "This call is from a federal prison. To accept this call, press 5. And so federal prison phone lines only allow for 15-minute calls, and then they kind of abruptly cut off. And so what happened, what followed for like a month, was these 15-minute conversations with Eric Hafner. He would just call me whenever he could get some time. And the more I talked to him, the more fascinated I became by this guy. Like, I just could not figure him out. You know, like a good politician, he dodged a lot of my initial questions. You know, like, "Why are you in jail? Why? How did you get my information?" And, you know, he talked a lot about his vision for Alaska, a state which he had never been to, by the way. It was his first. And he, you know, he talked about America. He talked about how the gap between rich and poor is widening at an alarming rate. He talked about how... this was 2024, by the way. He talked about that there was a convicted felon at the top of the Republican ticket. So he said that, in his words, he wouldn't be the only one on the ballot with a criminal record. But in between our conversations, I was researching him. And his reality, like, his life was so much stranger than anything that we were talking about. According to the indictment, he was serving a 20-year sentence because... he, as a teenager, had gotten arrested on like a couple petty marijuana possession charges, juvenile, like, you know, no big deal. But then years later, he had moved to Ireland. And when he moved to Ireland, As an adult, he started calling and threatening all of these police and lawyers and judges in New Jersey who were all linked to these petty cases he faced as a teenager. Like, he just, like, had never let it go. And so I also found out that he had run twice before, once in Hawaii and once in Oregon, both states he was not a resident of. And then I found out that his mom, the one I had talked to before, who seemed just sort of like a quaint, kind Midwestern lady, she was talking about the deer in her garden. I found that she had run for the exact same seat 6 years before in Alaska, while also having never been to the state. Like, they were some sort of like bizarre failed political dynasty. And, you know, and by the way, I should say, I don't, like, this isn't a story about the Hafner family's motives or trying to understand them. You know, I think I think it's a bit of a fool's errand, but I think it is a story about the sort of people that you encounter in journalism and the way, and the journalist-subject relationship and how kind of at its barest, you know, for all its pomp and circumstance, it is just sort of two people who normally would never meet or intersect and thrown into a bit of a crash course into each other's stories and each other's lives. And so, you know, I would debate about if I should put a story out about him. You know, I figured, but then I decided every week covered everyone else on the ballot, so it was only fair. So I put out a story just sort of being like, here's who this guy is. Is he running in good faith? Probably not. I don't know. You know, is this like the most high-profile possible attempt at a work release? Maybe. And so I put the story out. It didn't really go anywhere. It was, you know, like, it just, you know, ran on state news, and then it was on to the next thing. And, you know, ahead of the primary, the sort of he stopped calling me as much, and then it kind of abruptly dropped off. In the primary, he got, as expected, a fraction of a percent of the vote. He scored at the bottom of the 11 candidates that were running. And I figured that was the end of Eric Hafner, as far as I was concerned. And, you know, I had other things going on at the time. I really missed Baltimore and was thinking about coming back. I'd been in Alaska for a while. I had an offer from an outlet here for a job, and I was considering taking it. And then, like, about a month later, I get a call at, like, 7 in the morning from, and I answer it, and it's a senior political editor at the NPR mothership in D.C. And he's basically like, what the fuck is going on up there? And I didn't know it at the time, but what was going on up there was overnight, through some kind of crazy circumstance, Eric Hafner was advancing to the general election ballot. And so what happened was, you know, this is 2024. I think we all remember this pretty hellish election cycle. And, you know, so Alaska is a ranked choice voting state. So, you know, the top four candidates, the top four most popular candidates, advance the general election ballot, regardless of party. And I know what you're probably thinking. Eric Hafner was nowhere near the top of the election ballot, or the top four most popular candidates. But, you know, Alaska's sitting U.S. House representative, very well-established kind of household name in Alaska, was a Democrat. And when everyone saw the primary results, almost every Republican overnight dropped out of the race to consolidate votes for their strongest challenger, who was this son of this, like, big Alaska political family. And they basically all dropped out overnight. So it was almost like the entire state just started going down this list, and they were crossing off names, and they ended at Eric Hafner. So the general election ballot, that, you know, the four people that everyone was voting on to represent the state were this very well-known incumbent U.S. House representative, her Republican challenger, the really well-known independent candidate, and Eric Hafner, this man in a jail cell thousands of miles away. I was as shocked as the NPR editor was. And the reason this mattered so much, the reason he was calling me, was because, remember, this was 2024, and the projected margins between the incumbent and her Republican challenger were expected to be razor thin. And people were worried that, you know, he was running as a Democrat, so he could take votes away from the incumbent, and maybe enough votes to tip the scales, and maybe enough votes to flip the seat from Democrat to Republican. And this was also when the majority in the U.S. House was razor thin. And so people were worried that if Alaska flipped Democrat to Republican, it could be the straw that flips the entire U.S. House. And Congress and affect every single one of us. And obviously, before you say anything, I know, you know, I'm also living in the present. But so, you know, this editor's trying to figure out what's going on. He's like, I need you to write something up for NPR. And so we hang up the phone, and like right after that, all of these other national reporters start calling me. All like my phone is just buzzing, not like nonstop, from all these reporters from other outlets. And they're all trying to get a hold of Eric Hafner, and they can't because the prison had gone into an obviously unrelated lockdown. And so like we didn't even know if Eric Hafner knew about his big come up. Like if he had been in lockdown. And so, you know, everyone's trying to get a hold of him, and no one can get a hold of him. And the only thing they could find, the only information they can find about him, the only person who had talked to him or knew who the hell he was me. And so I suddenly broken this national story, and I'm in my office, and I'm like furiously typing up something for NPR, and people are stopping into my office, and my phone is buzzing like crazy, and people are calling me, and the cats are probably screwing beneath my feet, and now the Alaska Democratic Party is calling me and telling me that they're planning on suing the state to remove them from the ballot, and they're asking me if I can give them information. I'm saying no, and they're threatening to subpoena my calls with him, and like I'm completely in over my head. And about a week later, I called the job in Baltimore, and I turned it down. Not because I didn't want it, or, you know, not because I didn't miss Baltimore, I think, and not because of Eric Hafner, certainly. But, you know, I think I felt like I wasn't really done with Alaska yet, and I did really want to see how this all turned out. Though, you know, we all kind of know how this story turns out a little bit. So, you know, the general election came, Eric Hafner finally got out of lockdown and started doing press, you know, his press tour. The general election came, and it was, you know, the Republican candidate did win, by a significant margin, enough that Eric Hafner's fraction of a vote didn't really matter. And the majority in the U.S. House did flip, as well as, you know, the Senate and the presidency. And, you know, about a year after that, I left Alaska. The pull to come back to Baltimore finally was too great. You know, I missed the city. And as for Eric Hafner, a year later, he ran again as a Republican in Florida and was disqualified. And now... he and his mom are both on the ballot in Alaska again this year, running for the House and the Senate, respectively. As far as I know, neither one still have ever been.